Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show on your radio. It is the fan up state. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. We got 3 hours left. It is Wednesday. You know what Wednesday is? Wednesday is a day where we have like a combination of looking at what was and evaluating what is to be. That's what we do on Wednesdays. That is what we are doing on this Wednesday.
Reflection Wednesday?
We need a good word for it, okay. You know? We've got Monday. It used to be X's and O's Tuesday, but we're kind of doing that today because yesterday we had Teamwork Tuesday, which
I did notice,
I made up on the fly.
I noticed that theme yesterday. I just, for some reason.
It was not hidden. It was not thinly veiled. Yesterday was Teamwork Tuesday. We talked about, and it's not normally on Tuesday, what we do is we do our, okay, we're over the emotion of the L. We're over the emotion of the dub. We're over the emotion of this, that, and the other. Let's evaluate what happened critically. And we are doing that today. So if only for this week, Wednesday is X's and O's Wednesday. Wednesday is what happened Wednesday. What needs to happen Wednesday? I know that that's way too many words for what is supposed to be a fun little tag on the show.
Yeah, where's the alliteration? There's got to be a W word in there somewhere.
I mean, I think we could get away with what happened Wednesday. For this day alone, it's what happened Wednesday. But we are evaluating what we saw on the football fields, baseball diamonds around America this past few days here on a Wednesday. We did that a little bit in the last hour of the show. We talked about South Carolina and Kentucky. My takeaway from that game, after a not thorough but relatively thorough rewatch of the South Carolina-Kentucky game last night, my takeaway from that was I think you got back in the run game to the fundamentals. I think you got into a spot where you were able to say to the running backs, not every carry is going to be hit the hole as hard as you can because there's not going to be a hole, and the only thing that's going to get you yardage is falling forward through contact. But you were actually establishing the foundations of the run, which you're going to have to do against LSU, if only because you need to make LSU's linebacker core, which is very good, play honest football, honest defense, so that Mike Shula can dial up some more plays from Lenore Sellers as a runner, as a threat, you know, like Ole Miss did with Trinidad Chambliss when they gave you the blueprint on how to beat LSU this past Saturday, if you're taking notes. With Clemson, we are going to talk about what I would like to see as you have your get-right game against North Carolina. Fortunately for Los Tigres, you have two get-right games back-to-back. You have North Carolina, you have Boston College, both of them on the road. Now, I would remind you that even though it is a get-right game against a pair of clearly inferior opponents, that this is also the type of games that these franchises live for. UNC pulling an upset that I predict that zero people will predict this weekend. UNC pulling the upset over Clemson this weekend is the type of upset that gets everybody going, okay, maybe they're not the hot steaming pile of garbage we thought they are. Maybe Bill Belichick has figured something out here. It just took him some time. Boston College, nobody, quick, name me a Boston College player. Hell, most of you, tell me who Boston College's coach is right now. They're a nothing program. A couple of years they weren't. A couple of years they had some guys coming through there. A couple of years that they were pulling some upsets, whatever. But they're not in that spot anymore. How do you get the faithful to get riled back up to participate in name, image, and likeness? How do you get the fellas that have checked out for the BC program to check back in? A win over Clemson and do it. So you're going to get the best that they have. You will still have to be very close to your best to get those wins. But I think what happens on the football field in these next two games for Clemson is going to be more impacted by what Clemson does than by anything that UNC or that Boston College can do. So we'll come to that a little bit later on in the show. But here's where we are in the show now. We are in the opening segment of hour number two. It is 7:05 in the morning. You have less than 55 minutes until you have got to be to the office. Less than 55 minutes until you've got to get checked in, logged in, respond to all those passive-aggressive emails your boss sent yesterday because you weren't doing your job because you were sitting there watching baseball all day because baseball is awesome, and then you've got to get to work. Which effectively means kill time until tomorrow night when football starts again. I get it. I understand. I'm here to help. That is why Lonzo and I, every morning just after the beginning of the 7 o'clock hour, do this. 'Tis indeed the water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office and start killing time until football starts up again. That's what you're doing. Let's just all be honest with each other, shall you? Shall we? So when you walk down that long hallway and you go hide in the corner of the break room so the boss can't see you so that you and Jim from Accounts Receivable can talk a little sports together, this is what you'll be talking about. Item number one. The Major League Baseball postseason is underway. The wild card round, the format for those of you that may be unfamiliar, a best of three series, all three games hosted by the higher seeded team. We got those games underway yesterday, a quad of games that put four teams on the brink of elimination. The first team on the brink of elimination, the Cleveland Guardians. They take a 2-1 L against the Detroit Tigers. Not a huge shock there because maybe baseball's best pitcher, Tarek Skubal, was on the bump for the Detroit Tigers last night. How about this stat line? 7.2 innings, three hits allowed, 14 strikeouts, one run surrendered. He pitched a beauty. And it was not a bad performance on the other side from Gavin Williams for Cleveland. Six innings, five hits, two runs allowed, struck out eight, just one walk on 88 pitches. Skubal, by the way, went 107 pitches. You know what that says to me? When they let their ace go out there for 107 pitches at a point in baseball history where teams are very rarely allowing pitchers to go out there and hit the century mark, it says to me Detroit viewed this as a must-win game. It said to me that they understand that while game one is important, they may very well be underdogs in games two and three. And obviously in a best of three series, that would mean that they are cooked. That says to me that this team is aware that they needed to give themselves a chance to close out in two or three and not have their backs against the wall. They got what they needed out of Tarek Skubal. Now, if Detroit can move on, he effectively gets 5 days of rest before he would have to go in game one of the next round. That being said, it's not like Detroit did a ton offensively. They had just five hits. They had only one multi-base hit. It was from Riley Green. He had a double, and that was really it. No dongs, no nothing else. They were 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position. They ended up with a couple of hits here. Spencer Torkelson singled to left in the first to give them a 1-0 lead. Cleveland would get it back in the fourth, tied up at 1-1. And then McKinstry had a sack bunt laid down that scored Riley Green in the seventh. And that was it for the Detroit Tigers last night, but it was all that they needed. In the second game of the day, the Cubbies at the crib, friendly confines, Wrigley Field, ended up with a win over the San Diego Padres, 3-1, your final. Matthew Boyd, 4.1 innings, 4 hits, 1 run allowed, K'd 2 in his first playoff start of this postseason. The Cubs would go on to use 5 pitchers in this game who surrendered a total of 4 hits to San Diego. This game is interesting because the Padres were my second favorite team out of the National League, pardon me, to make the World Series. Part of the reason why? Small ball excellence. I thought this team can hit the ball and get on base as well as anybody else. They're not going to rely, as the Yankees are, as the Mariners are, on sluggers, on dongs, on power shots. They're going to rely on playing small ball. They had the opportunity to do it yesterday at Wrigley, and they just failed. 4 total hits for San Diego. You pile that on with Pivetta giving up back-to-back dongs to Suzuki and Kelly in the 5th inning of play. They took a 2-1 lead at that point. Nico Horner would hit a sac fly to center in the 8th to score Dansby Swanson. 3-1. There's your final. San Diego could do nothing with the bat. They now face elimination today. Red Sox get a 3-1 win over the Yankees. Best game of the day yesterday. Garrett Crochet went out 7.2, 4 hits allowed. Gave up just 1 run. K'd 11. It was Max Fried that I feel the worst for. Max Fried won 6.1, gave up 4 hits, no runs, K'd 6, 102 pitches, threw a gem for the Yankees last night, and as soon as they went to Luke Weaver, did not record an out, 2 hits, 2 runs, 0 Ks. Luke Weaver gave up the lead that Max Fried kept them in. He was in a battle with Garrett Crochet, maybe the AL's best pitcher. And Boston was able to get it done. Volpe homer to right in the second. Yoshida would single to center and score Rafaela and Sogard to take a 2-1 lead in the 7th. The Yanks would see Bregman double to left. Story scored for Boston to take a 3-1 lead. The Yanks in the bottom of the 9th would end up with the bases loaded with 2 outs and do nothing with it. The Yankees constantly coming up with new, fun, creative, and inventive ways to break their fans' hearts. Boston now up. Called that one, against the Yankees with Game 2 today in New York. And finally, last night, the Dodgers exploded 10-5 winners over the Reds, with the Reds in the 8th trying to build a rally, but down 7 when that inning started. Just too little, too late. Teoscar Hernandez had a pair of dongs last night. Shohei Ohtani had a pair of dongs last night. Edmund had one as well in the 3rd inning. Hunter Green, Mike K-Prop King, giving up 3 home runs yesterday in his start. He would take the L, 3 innings, 6 hits, 5 runs allowed, K'd 3, through 3. Blake Snell, another pitcher who showed out last night. 91 pitches through 7 innings allowed, 4 hits, K'd 9, just 2 runs would score against Blake Snell as the offense for the Dodgers was going bananas. 15 hits and 9 ribbies for that offense. The Dodgers now up 1-0 on the Reds with Game 2 coming up today. If you are looking for the schedule, very similar to yesterday's, we will get the day started with Detroit at Cleveland at 1 o'clock, San Diego at Chicago at 3 o'clock, Boston, New York at 6, and Cincinnati, LA at 9. Whatever game 3s are necessary on Thursday, as of right now, they are scheduled to take place at the same time as their Game 2 components today. Let's get to item number 2. WNBA semifinals. The Las Vegas Aces now have a date slated with the Phoenix Mercury in the finals, which tip off on Friday night. A 107-98 win over the Indiana Fever last night. It was a showing from Asia Wilson. 35 points on 13 of 7 from the floor, 8 of 10 from the stripe. She also had 8 boards and 5 assists in this contest. Jackie Young would pitch in 32 as well. It was not in any way, shape, or form a bad night from the Indiana Fever. They forced overtime against a team that was a heavy favorite last night, or going into the series, the Indiana Fever. Remember, This is a team that was down five opening day players. They had to, at multiple times this season, utilize the emergency player clause that lets you just sign somebody because you don't have enough of somebodies to go play basketball. Even with that lineup, 27 out of Odyssey Sims, Aaliyah Boston added 11 with 16 boards last night. Indiana was able to force Vegas to overtime. All five starters had double digits for the Fever, but just ran out of gas late. So we end up with the Aces and the Mercury. Now, what's next? We got to find out. Nafisa Collier did leave this game in the third quarter with severe cramping in her leg. She actually had to be transported to a local medical facility to receive fluids to get rid of that lower extremity cramping. She walked in the third quarter. Obviously, we'll see what happens next with her. And then, of course, and we will get to this later on in the show. Sorry, I said Nafisa Collier. It's Kelsey Mitchell who left the game last night. Nafisa Collier's in the news because she went bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S, on the leadership of the WNBA. Straight up called out Commissioner Kathy Engelbert yesterday. And this was interesting because it obviously started a bit of a feud between her and Kathy Engelbert. And then a ton of WNBA players, including Angel Reese, including Paige Buckets-Beckers and others, all said we are in Nafisa's camp. So now there is open rebellion of sorts between WNBA players and WNBA leadership, and this is going to be very interesting. I will talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Not necessarily because I know there's a ton of WNBA fans, although I know there are many, more along the lines of this is going to kind of be an interesting case study. Could this lead to a point where, in the future, other athletes in other leagues start to strike out against commissioners who they do not feel are acting in their best interest? We'll find out. But before we get there, let's get to item number three. The business side of college football is oftentimes boring, and I have been told many times that it is not something I should prominently feature on the show because most of you don't care about it. However, as I have also said many times, that while you may not care about or be entertained by the business side of sports, the business side of sports is massively importante. And it is massively importante because it shapes the future, man. It shapes what is going to happen in this sport in years going forward. We do have a new business of college football story that is broken. A federal judge has allowed the Pac-12 conference's lawsuit against the Mountain West Conference over $55 million in poaching fees to go forward. For those of you unfamiliar with this story, the nuts and bolts are this. Once all them teams left the Pac-12 to go over to the Big Ten, it left a situation where the Pac-12 had two teams remaining in it. How did they pick that up? Well, they called a bunch of teams in the Mountain West. So would you guys like to jump up to a previously Power 5 conference and try to help us build this thing back into a Power 5 conference once again? So a number of teams, Colorado State, Utah State, San Diego State, Fresno State, Boise State, all set to leave the Mountain West and join the Pac-12 starting next year. Well, the Mountain West, in the contract they had with all of those teams, have a clause that says, if you leave before the expiration date of this contract, the conference that signs you will owe us $10 million for the first team they pick up and $500,000 for every additional team. Add on to that the $17 million plus in exit fees that the schools were as a group responsible for. It tallies up to $55 million. A lawsuit brought against the Pac-12 from the Mountain West to gain that was countered by a lawsuit by the Pac-12 to say, no, that rule is not legal, nor is it enforceable. The Mountain West made a motion to dismiss the suit. Judge Claudia Wilkins said, no, the Mountain West motion to dismiss the case is not granted, meaning that the Pac-12's argument that those contracts are unenforceable or illegal outright can go forward at this point, meaning that there is now a reality where the Mountain West Conference sees the biggest names in that conference, Colorado State, Utah State, San Diego State, Fresno State, and Boise State, all leave. They get zero compensation for it. The Pac-12, while it obviously will not reach the stature that it was when it was America's oldest power conference, it did get better. It got better. And there's some upstart teams in that with Pac-12 money. Again, it ain't ACC, Big 12, SEC, or Big 10 money. But with Pac-2, now Pac-8, now Pac-12, whatever they are money, we'll be able to grow. And considering some of these teams have made some noise the last couple of years, it helps everybody get better. The poor Mountain West, on the other hand, is left out in the cold, down to like six teams that nobody knows or cares about, and the $55 million that they were expecting from the Pac-12 and those schools that they would have been able to put into investing in the conference, finding some new members to get in there and hope that they can grow that conference, etc., they may very well get not a dollar of it. And if that is the case, what happens if the SEC calls Clemson and Florida State and says, look, we have got, while it might be a long shot, legal precedent now that says you can make the argument the ACC's contract is unenforceable, that it wasn't argued in good faith, or whatever. This could be a landscape-shifting decision. We may or may not get back into that later, depending on how many of you care. Let's take a break. When we come back, I am Rob Brown. He is Lonzo. I don't know why I said when we come back, I'm Rob and he's Lonzo. That's true regardless.
Yeah, I hope we're still us when we come back.
We may go back to being the Weenus and Pitt show. Who knows? We'll find out. Sports reporters are really making me angry this week, and I'll tell you why when we come back. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
When the Associated Press poll dropped on Sunday, I knew that when we came in on Monday, we were going to have an interesting conversation. Because the poll this week, as far as I'm concerned, while there were one or two spots that I believe that they got it wrong, those spots were not as egregious as they have been in the past few weeks. But what I genuinely knew was going to cause a, I thought, relatively engaging discussion on the show was an article that was written by a voter in the AP poll. The voter in the AP poll put up an article where she titled the article, "Picking a New Number One, and Why I Still Have Georgia Ranked Ahead of Alabama." Now, if you are paying attention and are in any way, shape, or form a college football fan, you are very aware of the fact that the University of Alabama went into Athens, Georgia, and put it on the dogs this past week in a 24-21 victory. That, to be honest with you, Alabama was in control of for the majority of that game. Ty Simpson had, I don't think, a coming out party, because I told you 2 weeks ago, I got to see him do it against a big team. But I have seen Ty Simpson develop as a quarterback. This dude might be a dude. Keep an eye on him. Well, he was, I'm not going to say flawless, Ty bleeping Simpson. He was not flawless in this game against Georgia, but he was perfectly efficient. It is a game that I do not want to put the title game manager on Ty Simpson, because for many of you, that title has a negative connotation to it. I don't think it should. I think game manager sometimes is exactly what you need out of quarterbacks. In fact, I would even point out that even in the National Football League, there have been some games where star quarterbacks have been game managers. Jalen Hurts may be the perfect example. The man won a Super Bowl last year. And I would make the argument that while Jalen Hurts is talented, I don't think Jalen Hurts is wildly talented. I think he's very good. I think Jalen Hurts, because of the team and the strategy and the tactics they use, is a game manager. Nothing wrong with that. Bama beat Georgia, and I had an AP voter on Sunday night put out an article in which she proudly proclaimed that even though Alabama just not just beat Georgia, but convincingly, yes, it was only a field goal game, but again, Alabama was in control of that game. She still said, we're going in. I said that while I do my best as a member of the media and as somebody who is impacted financially, career-wise, every time that some of you go out there and say, well, everybody in the media is just out to get clicks. You're just out to bait people, to troll people, to get people raging and respond to you. That is a problem for me because I don't play that game. Never have, never will. In fact, have butted heads with direct coworkers who I believed were playing that game, and I called them out for it, and they didn't like it that much. Well, I said on Monday, I think that is exactly what this individual is doing. I think this is exactly what this person is doing. I think this person said this, not because it is the right call or they think it is a good thing to do. I think they said this because they knew people like me were going to say their name on the radio the next day. And as the old expression goes, any publicity is good publicity. Bad publicity is still good publicity. Well, I was rolling through some of the sites that I follow for college football yesterday. And while doing so, I came across a USA Today article. I'm good at this.
Some journeys, you know, it takes a few steps and you get there. So
the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. I took 5 of them right there. We arrived. I saw a USA Today article. And for what it is worth, traditionally, USA Today has actually been one of my more preferred media outlets, because I do not think, and this is the reason why people don't talk about USA Today all that much, USA Today does not, to me, lean into the clickbait. That is why Bob Nightingale has been writing for this organization for 1,000 years and is my favorite baseball guy. He is, and I've had him on our Saturday show, which used to exist, 100 times. Bob Nightingale is not a wildly energetic, entertaining person. Bob's a guy who friggin' knows ball. And when he writes, he doesn't write to enrage you or engage you. He writes because this is what is happening in baseball. And he's got great analysis on it. And I feel like we're getting away from that. And I feel like it's a problem. As I was scrolling through USA Today yesterday, I found an article that came up from Matt Hayes, who I have also had on the Saturday show. And I also like, which is why this article to some degree disappointed me. The reason it disappointed me is he writes an article about the Auburn Tigers. Now, Auburn lost to Texas A&M. Texas A&M's a good football team. I told you that before the season was started. That if Marcel Reed works out to be a dude, Mike Elko's a football guy, I am absolutely giving credit to coaches that are football guys. This A&M team is going to be good, and you know how I feel about the Colts.
Was it them that cheated? I can't remember if it was that game.
That was the Oklahoma game.
Okay.
That Auburn also lost.
All right.
Excuse me, the Oklahoma game is the one I'm talking about for this particular article.
Okay, so how many games has Auburn lost?
The Auburn Tigers, as they stand right now, and I'm glad you asked because it is a part of the crux of the article, they are currently 3-2 with consecutive losses to number 11 Oklahoma and number 9 Texas A&M.
3-2.
They are 3-2. They are currently 3-2. They have wins over Baylor, Ball State, South Alabama.
There's actually been 5 games already?
Yeah. Baylor, Ball State, South Alabama were wins. They lost to number 11, Oklahoma, which vaulted Oklahoma into the top six. And now number 9, number 9, Texas A&M, who have been vaulted into the top 10 because of their win over the Auburn Tigers. Now, I watched both of those games. And what I can tell you is that unequivocally, they were very much in that game against Oklahoma. And they very much had multiple complaints about. And I know that this doesn't mean as much coming from me because I am very much the guy who calls out referees for doing a bad job. And some of you think I go overboard on it. I don't, but some of you think I do. Very good conversations about some terrible calls that it has been argued If the calls are correct, Auburn wins the game. Not they might, like they win that football game. And then the Texas A&M game, 16-10. The offense looked bogged down, and that is problematic. But that is an Oklahoma team that has gone from, we'll see if Brent Venables is on the hot seat at the end of the year, to Brent Venables is going to the playoffs, guys. He's going to the playoffs. They have almost as difficult of a second half of the schedule as South Carolina does. Some people argue now with the results being what they are, maybe more difficult. I still think they're a playoff team. They might, remember I said coming into the year, I think the SEC has a 9-3 team going to the playoffs this year, and I think South Carolina is the best team suited to fill that role. Not anymore. It's Oklahoma at this point. And Auburn lost to that team by 6 points. And people are freaking out. And again, y'all know how I feel about Hugh Freeze. I am not a fan of the coach or the guy. Like, he's one of the few people that I go, I'm just not a fan of this guy away from football. I'm just not a fan. So, even though that is the case, Auburn's playing probably the best football they've played under Hugh Freeze. And yes, they have 2 losses. And yes, they're 3-2. And yes, you are what your record says you are. In those 2 losses, they were wildly competitive against 2 teams that are now top-tier SEC teams that are in the top 10. And both of them were by 1 score. And in one of them, much like I have said a number of times, South Carolina got bleeped by the refs against LSU and it cost them the game last year. I think they got bleeped by the refs against Oklahoma and it cost them the game this year. So what does Matt Hayes write in his article talking about the Auburn Tigers dated September 30th, 2025 on the USA Today website? Headline, great one, quote, only Urban Meyer can fix this Auburn mess. What are we doing, Matt?
Wow, all that for
what
that.
What are we doing?
All that for that.
Listen.
You mean a coach who has taken 2 teams to the national championship?
I sure do, because let me ask you a question. What was the condition of the Florida Gator football program when Urban Meyer left because of health and family concerns, which I believe, I'm not saying he was, I'm saying I believe, he was full of crap and lying. What was the state of the Gator program? The argument is, great one, they still haven't recovered. How many years ago was that? What was the state of the Ohio State Buckeye program when Urban Meyer left? It was not nearly as bad as Florida's program when he left, and you were in a pretty good spot because he had just been to a natty. But I would make the argument that it took, and a lot of people hung this on Ryan Day. It's Ryan Day's fault. Ryan Day, and I get that. I think it took a while. I think you got set back behind Michigan, and it took you a while to catch back up in the Big Ten. You've done it.
I was going
to
say,
but
well,
it took a minute.
Technically, you can still say that Ohio State's still behind Michigan because they haven't won against Michigan in quite some time.
You're reigning defending.
Yeah, I know.
And I've asked the question many times, and it is only Ohio State fans that say, I would be happy to lose to my rival if I won a national championship. Only the Buckeyes are the ones that have said, no, I'd rather beat Michigan and not win a natty than win a natty and lose to Michigan.
I don't believe that's entirely the case.
Okay, only one as a large contingent of the fan base.
All right.
But all that being said,
I mean, it's like a bad spot on a great apple. I mean, you know, I still enjoyed the apple.
Sure, you absolutely should. All of that being said, I look at this article. Now, to give Matt Hayes a bit of credit here, he did write the article, and in it is a paragraph that says, quote, if you will hire stained and discredited coaches like Bruce Pearl and Hugh Freeze, surely you'll throw unthinkable cash at Urban Meyer to see if one of the greatest coaches of our generation wants one more shot at the SEC. Because that's what it's going to take to fix this mess. Now, again, I think that your record is what your record says you are. But I also think that because it's a lost art in sports media, nuance is important. The nuance of this conversation, Auburn is probably 2 bad officiating calls and 2 bad offensive snaps away from being 5-0. They're that close. I don't think they're bad, and I don't think Hugh Freeze is that good of a coach, but I think he's built a pretty good staff around him that's taking care of the program. It feels to me like Auburn's a couple of things away from clicking and being a very good football team. Not a playoff team this year, but progressing upwards. And this is from a guy who said, I wouldn't have brought Hugh Freeze back this year. I'd have let him go. And I get the point that Matt Hayes is making here by saying, look, you've already thrown your legacy, you've already thrown your reputation under the bus because you hired Bruce Pearl and you hired Hugh Freeze, 2 guys who were available because of, let's say, tarnish on their reputation at previous jobs. So you're already willing to do it. Why not go one step further and go with a guy that I'm going to say, in my opinion, the majority of fans don't like. Like, view Urban as not a guy I want connected to my program. Sure, if he shows up and wins a natty, I'll celebrate it. But, like, I don't want to be represented by Urban Meyer. I get the point Matt's making here. But, like, why would we even entertain that? Why would we even entertain making that move? And why would we entertain it at a point in time where your team is two bad calls and two bad snaps away from being 5-0 with two top 15 wins under their belt? This is the kind of stuff that drives me to some degree crazy. All right, when we come back here in just a minute, there's another article up that I want to talk about. Because, as we have seen, Congress is at a very slow rate getting involved in college football. Well, the House of Representatives put forward their next version of the SCORE Act. And the SCORE Act has a very interesting clause in it. A clause that may have impact on players who slide down the draft board and the colleges they played for. If you don't see where I'm going, worry not, dear friends. I'll explain it when we come back. Rob Lonzo and you, the Rob Brown Show, is on the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Matthew Glenisk of USA Today has posted an article. The NCAA and college conferences, as we know, coaches, commissioners, presidents, they have been asking Congress to get involved with college sports moving forward. Part of the reason why is without antitrust laws and exemptions in place for the NCAA and college football, you have basically created a world where the NCAA can lay down restrictions, rules, guidelines, protocols, and athletes can challenge them. And as we have been telling you about every time these stories pop up, guys like Diego Pavia have been laying these challenges down and doing pretty well. And it is created, as I asked about a couple of weeks ago, actually not even a couple of weeks ago, last week, when the next athlete won a lawsuit allowing them to not count their JUCO years and basically play more time for the Indiana Hoosiers, I said, if this is going to be struck down with the judge's rationale of this violates antitrust laws, then does that not create a world where every NCAA rule can be challenged with the challenge of this does violate antitrust laws? And that creates a situation of concern, I think, for the NCAA. This creates, I think, concern for everyone who wears a suit involved in it. This is why everyone from the president of the NCAA all the way on down to coaches have gone to Capitol Hill 1,000 times and said, we need y'all involved. Because if Congress does not get involved, we can't do anything. Everything's getting challenged. We're spending a ton of money in legal fees, and we're losing more of these cases than we are winning. It is creating an unsustainable environment. And even as somebody who is pro-NIL, pro-portal, pro-player empowerment, etc., I do also recognize and understand that, because nuance matters, like there has to be a way for the NCAA to put down restrictions that work for everybody, but also Make it viable. Because as I've said 1,000 times, even I don't want 31-year-old college football players. I don't want to see guys who are good but not quite NFL good out there as 28-year-old men competing with 17-year-olds. Or creating a world where we don't have 17-year-olds because these guys are staying on scholarship for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years at different colleges. There has to be a balance in there somewhere, which is why I have said I like the concept of, and we can debate whether it should be 5 or 6, but I like the contract of once you graduate high school, we're putting down a 5-year rule. You have 5 years. You can play them. You can sit one. And hey, if you're in your final year of eligibility and you get hurt, I'm sorry, it sucks, but I can't have you here at 26 years old. Like, it can't happen, right? But again, all of that, no matter what concept we go with, Congress will have to be involved, or they will have to give antitrust exemption to the NCAA to be the primary and only governing body of college football. But of course, that would have to come, much like it does with the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, etc. That would have to come from a spot where players are now employees and they are allowed to unionize. Blah, 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 blah. Congress is starting to, in a very slow way, I was trying to come up with a more fancy word there, in a slow way, get involved. Republicans back in July put into order their version of the SCORE Act. On Monday, 3 Democratic senators introduced their response. It is called the SAFE Act, the Student Athlete Fairness and Enforcement Act. And there is a lot in this thing, but there are a few things that really stand out about this. Here's one. Section 202 of the bill says that if an athlete can get drafted and does not like what ends up happening, they can go back to college as long as they do not receive compensation for the pro league and as long as they declare their intention to return to school no later than 7 days after the draft. So let's say theoretically, Shedeur Sanders throws his draft party. He does not get selected in the first or second or third or fourth or fifth round, and he gets picked by the Browns. Let's say Shedeur Sanders does not want to play for the Browns. Or Shedeur Sanders believes, well, I didn't get drafted where I thought I was going to get drafted, so I'm going to go back to college. I am going to go back to college and play another year and try to get better and get ready and do better next year. I do have a problem with this. But the problem is not the protection of the college football player. The problem is from the perspective of an NFL fan. We know how important draft picks are. We know how valuable, even though they are usually used for trading purposes, there's a reason they're used for trading purposes. A fifth round pick can absolutely make it. Hell, a seventh round pick can make or break a team. The New Orleans Saints, when they made their Super Bowl run, Drew Brees was the reason, but Marcus Colston was the reason. A man drafted in the seventh round out of Hofstra. Could you imagine a world where Marcus Colston says, yeah, even though I'm only playing at Hofstra, I know I'm better than a seventh round pick. I'm going back to school. And especially now with the college transfer portal, I'm going back to A&M, but then bang, I'm immediately hitting the portal and I'm available. Hey, you guys know that I'm at least a fifth round NFL draft pick. Let me go somewhere else that I can bump that up.
It's just business. I mean, if you're going to make more money where you're at, why would you go somewhere else?
No issue with that from the perspective of the players, because again, I am almost always going to be pro player empowerment. If it creates a situation, much like NAL did, where a player has the ability to utilize the brand that they build, whether it is by playing football or being great on social media or whatever, to earn more money, I think they have the right to do it without the colleges paying them to do so. Rev share. I've got no problem with rev share. These schools are bringing in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to college football. Zero issue with the only reason that we watch. The players. None of you have ever watched an athletic department's meeting on a stream. None of you have ever heard that your school president's doing an interview. Let me tune in.
Would you watch players. It? I mean, those aren't on stream, right? Athletics.
So I'm sure some of the schools probably stream the public.
I would be interested.
I would too, but we're also nerds, right? Like the general pop, football fans aren't getting into that. We watch football for the players. No problem with them getting a chunk of the change from the massive billions of dollars of profit that it brings in and is going up every year. The issue that I have with this one is not for the college players. The issue I have here is, what happens if the Kansas City Chiefs are in a spot where they are right there on the borderline of being a Super Bowl team again, and they lost to the Eagles, and you're like, we draft the right guy. We just need a wide receiver. We just need a running back. We just need a left tackle. We draft the right guy who can come in and start, and we think he's in a we think we're in a good spot. And Kansas City selects in the sixth round of the NFL draft an unheard of but dominant at the FCS level offensive tackle out of Montana.
Bye-bye, Juwan Taylor.
Absolutely. But then that kid goes, yeah, no, I'm better than that. Even though it's the Chiefs, I'm not a six-round guy. I know I'm a second or third-round guy. I'm going back to Montana. What compensation do the Chiefs get out of that? Because I'll tell you right now, getting another fifth pick back, that doesn't help me right now. My window's open. I need that player now. I need a left tackle now. Creating a world where players do not have a right to say who they are going to be drafted for and play for in the draft, but they can say, well, I'm just not going to go. I that can't work, but that's for the NFL. This is very interesting to me, and I do not know what it means. Here's a couple of the other big things that come through the SAFE Act. Section 601 proposes to amend the Immigration and Nationality Act so foreign college athletes are no longer prohibited from NIL. To be honest with you, I didn't know until last night that they were. For instance, Purdue's Zach Edey, great basketball player, yeah? He's Canadian, eh? And so when he played his college basketball, Zach Edey couldn't capitalize on back-to-back National Player of the Year campaigns with traditional NIL. It was all about his... Now they would be able to. He was on an F1 visa. He could only profit in Canada. So when the Boilermakers scheduled games in Toronto, cha-ching, but he couldn't make money in the USA. Under this act, he would be able to. Uniform sponsorship patches. Section 702 says the NCAA or conference cannot prohibit sponsor jersey patches in any sport as long as the money from those deals, quote, preserve roster spots and scholarships for student athletes in non-revenue generating and women's sports at levels comparable with the 2023-24 years. So yes, Tennessee, you can throw that Love's Truck Stop patch on the jersey, but if you are going to do so, the money that you get from that partnership must go back into non-revenue sports. You've got to put that towards swimming and diving, track and field. For those of you that have said for a very long time since NIL and the portal dropped that all of this is a threat to the Olympic sports, all of this is a threat to the other college sports that you all claim to know and love, you should be very in support of that. Here is a created way to stream revenue from your biggest revenue producer, football and basketball, to keep Olympic sports alive. You guys can have that sponsorship. It goes back into the athletic department, but that money is used to preserve the Olympic sports. I honestly don't have an issue with that. The only issue that I can see propping up is, again, player-centric. What happens if a kid playing for Tennessee gets an NIL deal from Quick Trip, from Flying J, from Pilot Truck Stop, but now he's got to go out there on Saturdays and play in a jersey that has the Love's Truck Stop sign on his jersey. That could create conflicts of interest for the players, and I do have concerns about that.
I'm impressed by your truck stop knowledge. I just want to put that out there.
I take a lot of road trips. Here's another one. The only place where a game available last year, say Iowa and Indiana, was a subscription to Peacock. It was the only place you could watch that game. Section 905 of the SAFE Act requires football and basketball games to be available on a non-exclusive basis to at least one local outlet in market areas for participating institutions. So, if you're an Indiana fan and you're living in Bloomington and you want to watch the Indiana basketball game, but it is on Netflix, they would have to provide the broadcast rights to at least one local outlet so that every game is available to people who maybe can't pay or don't want to pay, frankly, for Netflix. I don't hate this one either. Now, I doubt this one's going to get passed because this one you're talking about millions of dollars, because that is absolutely a hit from the money that, say, Netflix would be willing or Peacock would be willing to hand over to schools to get the exclusive rights to those games. But I get it. This one feels like it's protect the fans. All right, there's a few more clauses in there I'd like to get to later on in the show when we come back in a minute. Got your audio blitz, a couple of bits of sound for you. All that and more coming up after Lonzo gives you an MVP caliber sports flash.
Took a deep breath. Here we go. The MLB wildcard round started yesterday, and the Detroit Tigers defeated Cleveland 2-1. Detroit needed only five hits, including RBIs from Spencer Torkelson and Zach McKinstry, to win. The Cubs grabbed a 3-1 win over San Diego in Game 1. Chicago had back-to-back homers from Seiya Suzuki and Carson Kelly. Boston beat the Yankees 3-1. New York had 13 combined strikeouts and failed to score with the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth. And the Dodgers took down the Reds 10-5. Blake Snell got the win with 7 innings and 9 strikeouts. The Big 12 fined Colorado $50,000 and reprimanded the school publicly for a derogatory chant aimed at BYU fans. The chant, which specifically mentioned Mormons, was chanted during BYU's 24-21 victory in Boulder. A federal judge will allow the Pac-12's lawsuit against the Mountain West Conference over $55 million in poaching fees to go forward. The suit claims the clause schools signed when joining the Mountain West, mandating payment for leaving for the Pac-12, is unlawful.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.